Hello and welcome to Pot Songs, where we interview inspirational people in service to others as inspiration for a new song. Today, my guest is the astrologer, Chrissy Blaze. Well, it's just great to be chatting to you because I follow you so much on Theorist Radio Live and all your newsletters and everything. It's fantastic. You're such a big part of my life.
Oh, Jack, lovely thing to say. Thank you so much.
You don't realize you're pumping these things out into the ether, and so many of your books have helped me so much, and I just want to say thank you.
Well, I appreciate that very much. I think today we're going to talk about deeper into love, right?
We are. We're going deeper into love.
It's always a good place to go, right? Especially now, when you look at the crazy things happening in our world. You almost think. Feel hopeless. I hope people don't, but because there is so much we can do through this great power that we have within us.
Yeah.
Which everybody has within this capability to find this power of love and to use it for the benefit of others. And that's, I think, the message of my book, Deeper Into Love, is telling people, giving steps along the way of this path, which is a difficult path for all of us. I'm sure you know, Jack, you just had a baby, and I imagine it's a path of sacrifice in a way, is it not? You probably felt love at a deeper place than you have before. Is that true?
It is, yeah. I mean, I've certainly had to sacrifice my life before. I'm quite nostalgic for the time that I had before, you know. I indulged myself, you know, in all these shows and everything, and now it's like I'm scrapping around for seconds, so I definitely have to sacrifice.
Yeah, which is once we go higher into love or deeper into love, then that is a place where all of us have to go to find, you know, a deeper part of this power. When you think about, you know, I believe everything in the universe, and I know you do, Jack, is living. Mm-hmm. And when you think about the Earth, for example, a great living being who gives us everything. And very rarely do we think about giving back to the earth.
Yeah.
I know we do through the 12 blessings. Blessed is the Mother Earth. We offer our prayers and in different ways. But this great being, if you think about her as a living being, is a life of total sacrifice. And the sun as a living being constantly gives. And I think we're like a reflection of this, because that really is our true nature. And if you look back at all the great people in history and the great people today, their love in action is always involved in sacrifice. So I think eventually we all have to accept that. I mean, I was just thinking about, I have great respect for all the people who rush in at times of global disaster, like the earthquake in Turkey, the earthquakes in Turkey. And the rescue workers rush in, and the medics and the Doctors Without Borders. And they rush into help without thinking of their own comfort, what's going on in their own lives, and all the things that, you know, are so important to us. They sacrifice that. And they might think they're giving love. They probably don't. But in fact, that's what they're doing. They're offering themselves in service to help and to heal others. And I think these are, you know, very special times when special times for us to recognize that what they're doing is really love in action. Love is very different from just an emotion. It's a living thing, a living energy. And Dr. King said, the founder of the Aetherius Society, who I followed for many, many years and still do, although he's passed on, he said that the real energy crisis which exists upon our world is the spiritual energy crisis. And if that one was solved, he said, and I'm paraphrasing, all the other crises would fall into balance. And spiritual energy is love, isn't it? It's the energy of love. And if you think about it, Jack, I'm sure you'd agree, what's wrong with our world is this lack of love. Don't you agree?
Yeah.
Because whether it's a war or whether it's political division and, you know, people that get very wound up about other people having different beliefs from them and all that division we see constantly, terrorism, global terrorism, domestic terrorism. It's all this lack of love. As I think John Lennon was right when he said, you know, love is the answer, basically. Love is all we need.
Yeah.
But it's not that easy to get there, of course.
Yeah, maybe so we should give people a background, because that's how I know you, is from the Aetherius Society. You've been in it for many, many years. And I discovered it about 3 or 4 years ago. And yeah, it's really open mind. Like you were giving the example that the Earth is a living being. Many, many millions of lives evolved, more evolved than us. And that's not something I'd heard from another religion or another spiritual teaching. That's just one example of the teachings from the Aetherius Society.
Yeah, I was fortunate to meet Dr. King. I heard of Dr. King at a very young age. I was a child, and I was sort of a bit disillusioned with the church I was going to, and I had so many questions, and in the end I stopped going. I was about 7 or 8. Finally, I started going to a spiritualist church, and I found it very fascinating. I wanted some direct experience, you know. And it was there that I met a gentleman called Ray Nielsen, who was one of the senior disciples of Dr. King, and became a bishop and so forth, and just a wonderful man. And I met him, I was 14 at the time, and he told me all about the Aetherius Society. And everything just made sense. It made so much sense, far more than what I'd been taught at the Church of England church that I'd been going to. And he gave me a complete picture of the Aetherius Society. And it was just, as you say, the teachings were so advanced, and yet they seemed so real. And looking back, there's so much of this time. Dr. King, when I finally met him, I was in my early 20s. And I sort of, after I come across Ray, I got into theosophy and I became Rosicrucian, and I tried Buddhism, Zen Buddhism.
Oh, right. Wow.
Various disciplines. And I love them all, actually. I really love theosophy, and I still do. But I wanted something, I wanted a master, I think, something that was real and happening now. The trouble with Rosicrucianism, I don't know if you've ever come across it,
mm-hmm.
but it's wonderful, but it's really slow. It sends you a class and one a month, you know, and it's like, yeah, I did that in the first day, you know, now what do I do? When I met Dr. King, it was so exciting. I heard about him, then I met him, because he was making history now. He was doing things that the theosophists had talked about and so forth. He was teaching that, but going beyond that. And then he was inventing these global healing missions. And it was terribly exciting, because all this was happening as I was following him at the time, from the early 70s, I have to admit, to when he passed away in 1997. So terribly exciting time, and his teachings are very much the same. They're of the time, and they're of the future too, and they really are fantastic.
Yeah, that thing that love is an energy, the spiritual energy crisis, that's that it's not it, you can count in units, and there is that right? Is that a good way of explaining it?
In units,
or in terms of spiritual energy, it's a physical thing. It's an energy, like electricity. Yeah. So,
like electricity, but on a different frequency.
Right,
it has to be manipulated differently from electricity. I'm actually just learning about electricity now, which is another topic. But fascinating. You know, the world is full of these electrons, right?
Mm.
I used to think, how does electricity happen? To me, that was a miracle. I could take on board like life after death and reincarnation and flying saucers and life on other planets. That was easy for me from a young age. But electricity and science and things like that were very like miracles to me. Mm. And I'm finally beginning to understand it. So spiritual energy, yes, it's this energy that we all have within us that we all can bring even greater powers of energy to us. And there's simple ways we can do that. And one is just when we start to reach up to truth, if you like, to study truth, we activate the higher chakras, we draw down more, we have a sort of magnetic attraction and draw down more of the pranas to us, which help us to become more powerful. And then when we this energy we start to feel within us when we offer it to the world. Like, for example, if there is terrible tragedy in the world, we feel we want to do something. Well, what we can do very simply, and it can make a huge difference, is just raise our hands in prayer and send this love out to the world. And what we're doing is we're actually sending physical, spiritual energy out. And this energy must, because of the law of karma, because of the law of physics, it must have a result, a positive result, because our prayers are positive. We're trying to bring healing and help to the people. So it's a very real thing. And the more we do it, the more we'll feel it. And people often feel it in their heart center, the chakra of the heart, or the palms of their hands, which are kind of chakras within them, which can radiate energy. And the more we do it, the more we can feel that.
Right. So it's like, So it's like Reiki. People that kind of understand that now, you know, you place your hands over someone and you imagine white light going into them. But this is sending out to the world or directing it to a particular point.
Exactly. Yeah. I often think that healing a person, in a way, it's like healing the world. Because, for example, if you have a broken arm or something, you get treatment for the arm, but the whole body starts to work to heal the arm, doesn't it? If you cut a finger, the whole body starts to work to heal the finger. You can prove to yourself that the body is one unit. It's kind of the same with the world. We are one unit, only we don't really realize that. We talk about oneness, but more people have to realize that. And when one part of it is sick, the whole of it is sick in some degree, because we not only have our personal karmic pattern that we're changing every second of every day for the better, the worse, or just, you know, average, but we're part of this karmic pattern of the whole of humanity. So if one part is sick, I think we have kind of like a duty as part of that to help raise that part, you know, whether it's to send our money to victims of an earthquake, or also send our prayers, to send our positive thoughts. One important thing is not to try and get people to change their minds. You know, I know people have said, oh yeah, I've been sending prayers to Putin, for example, to get him to change his mind. And this, well, that's kind of, then you're getting into
like magic.
Dark magic, you know. So. But I think we have this duty, don't you, Jack, to sort of help wherever we can.
Yeah, but it's not something you realize you're doing, because traditionally prayer is you pray. The idea of prayer is you pray to God to do something for you or for the thing you want. Please stop the war in Russia and Ukraine. So, but this you're saying, what you're saying is very different. It's you as an individual send energy.
Yeah, exactly. It's very different, very fundamental. And I learned that from Dr. King, who taught this dynamic prayer. And actually, before that, I worked for 7 years in a theological department, actually King's College London, which had a thriving theological department then at that time of 300 people training to be a clergy, training to be ministers. And there were no women at the time in the department. I was junior secretary to the dean of the college. And it was there that I met some wonderful people. These young guys are trained to be priests, so absolutely fantastic people.
Full of love, maybe.
Yeah, they wanted to help others and they wanted to give service, and they're really genuine people. But one thing I realized, that they didn't ever teach prayer in their curriculum. There was no teaching of prayer whatsoever. It was just something that you followed how other people did it, you know. So they did it kind of lifelessly. And, you know, because I was the junior secretary to the dean, I used to make the coffee in the mornings for the professors and the tea in the afternoon for the professors. So I, being a very inquisitive and kind of forthright person at the time, I was probably about 20, I think, I would ask them questions like, why don't you teach prayer? Because I just heard about this type of prayer myself. And why isn't reincarnation taught? And actually, one of the professors was a Professor Parinder, who was a quite a well-known professor of comparative religion. So I'd spend a long time in his office talking about life after death and all this. So I had that wonderful experience. And there was great people, as I say, but prayer is something, and even now, it's not really taught as a discipline through which we send energy to others, as you say, like healing, is it?
No.
It's a mystery, don't you think?
Well, maybe there's some interference because this is a peace mudra. Putting your hands together is an Indian mudra for keeping energy inside the body. And we're taught this is the way to pray, but this is really, I think, a manipulation way back when to keep, because this is the way you should pray, with the hands sending energy out.
Exactly.
You don't want to keep the energy in the body. You want to get it out there.
Exactly. And I think that one thing, Jack, makes this a huge difference. And people listening, watching to this can just try it themselves. Mm. Get a prayer that you know, do it like this, with all the intensity you can, all the feeling you can, do the same prayer like this, and just see what you feel. And I'd be surprised if you don't feel very different. It's like an expansion. You sort of feel energy flowing through you, as it will. So yeah, these people at King's College, they were sincere. They were heartfelt. And their prayers were so honest and sincere. And if only they'd done that, the energy would have flown, I think, in very powerful ways. And in fact, I did try and get some of them to do that. And one of the priests, actually, who was there, I felt he'd be a really good healer. He was a very magnetic person. And I tried to get into healing. Years later, he got hold of me, called me on the phone and said, "You know, you were right. I've become a healer and I'm healing in hospice. I'm working in hospice care and healing." So, you know, it's always good to talk to people, even though they appear not to really take things on board. You can't change people's minds, but you can, you know, offer them alternatives, I suppose.
Mm. So is that why you wrote this book, "To the Deeper Into Love, 7 Keys to a Heart-Based Spirituality? Because you always write your books with a purpose. I know you really focus on an issue. So is this something you felt that you could make a difference with?
I hope so. But, you know, Jack, it's like anything creative, whether it's music or writing a book or art, you have to get people to read it or listen or look at it. And that's the hard part. And that's the part I'm not terribly good at. You know, I'm good at promoting other people. But promoting my own, it's like, it might be like this with music, I don't know. But once I've written it, I'm like, I'm done, you know.
Do you feel same, like exactly that? The same, yeah, with the music. Yeah. It's so honestly good. Listen, it's such an amazing song. I don't think I should do anything else.
And then you're on to the next.
Yeah.
And I think that's the creative process.
Mm.
So, yeah, so getting people to read it. But that is, going back to that. I wrote it to make people realize some of the things we've been saying, that, you know, love is an energy. And not just an emotion, it's an energy that we can use to help ourselves, because once we use it to help others through healing of an individual, our loved ones, or the world, then, of course, by the law of karma, the benefits of that come back to us. That's not the reason we do it.
Mm.
You know, when you give healing to your baby, you're not thinking, "Oh, this is going to be good for me." It's not. But that is the truth, you know, when we give healing and love. So I wrote it to sort of help people understand the different aspects of love, if you like, and how I like to be very practical. And I gave keys as how you can start to introduce into your life. Like the first one, I think, is awaken. And how do you awaken to this power within you? Well, there are various ways. And I think one is to actually do something, like first thing in the morning. We never have any time, like we're rushing around having breakfast and getting ready. But I try and do, and I think I do almost every day, is just spend a few moments giving thanks for the day. And that's like a magical act, right? You're setting your purpose. And then I do my breathing exercises, which is another thing to fill you with these pranas, these universal light sources, and this energy. And then another very good thing is I visualize the day as like a blank canvas. Like each day is new, and whatever experiences we have in this day is it's not, don't try not to bring the past into today. Make it sort of like a Zen thing. Today is the day, and it could be the most important day in your life, this day. So to be fully alert and awakened to what could happen, and then start, the next one is to start following the signs of life. You agree with the signs of life, Jack? I'm sure you've had them, right?
Yeah, these synchronicities.
And things that sometimes I think you have to learn something, right? We're on this path of learning and growing. We all are. I like to think everyone is on this spiritual path. Some consciously, but everyone's on it. And on this path, we're all here to learn and to grow, right? And sometimes we don't learn things. We keep repeating the same say, right? I mean, I have.
I too.
And it's like you get, I think, it's almost like I felt you get, I made three chances, because it always seems to be the, takes me a few times to learn something. And there was something I was really stuck on, right? And I kept hearing the name on the radio of this lady who was a poet, right? And I was a poet as a child. I used to write poetry all the time. And I kept hearing her name. I don't know why. But anyway, one day I walked into a bookstore. I was still trying to work out this thing that I was supposed to be learning, and I couldn't quite learn it. I walked into a bookstore, pulled out a book, and another book literally fell on my head. And it was a biography about this poet, this lady, right? So I read the book, and it answered my question. She wasn't really a famous person, but she was a kind of a fairly well-known poet in England at the time. And everything that she'd gone through in her life, I was going through now. And I got the solution to how I could move on from this problem. And it was amazing. So what I mean by the signs, if you're not following the signs or listening to the signs, and it's really important, something will literally come along and, you know, knock you on the head. Mm. I mean, Gary had that. His mother was always very spiritual, and she was always talking about spiritual things, and he really wasn't interested. And it wasn't until he had a really serious, quite a serious car accident, and literally the roof of the car came off, that it kind of woke him up to, you know, spiritual things. He was very young at the time, and turned to that. So hopefully those things don't have to happen to us. But often the really difficult times are the greatest times for learning. Do you agree, Jack?
Growing pains.
I mean, at no point, I've just gone through a kind of major health crisis, and I'm out the other end in remission and all that. But there's no point in going through it if you're not learning from it, I think. No point, and I can say this in all honesty, because I've been there now, to say, why is this happening to me? So many people say that, oh, I don't deserve this. Well, if you believe in karma, I know exactly why I deserve the experiences I had. And all I wanted to do during this time was to clear up the karma and really learn from it and really grow from it, you know. And I'm not saying I have really grown, but I, you know, I've certainly learned a lot from it.
Did you remember from past lives why you had that, or from?
Some of it, yeah. I think that karma is very long. We have thousands and thousands of lives, but some of it was from this life
too. And you get it because you can get ready to deal with it.
I'm sorry?
You get it because you're ready to deal with it. Because you can learn.
Yeah, that's another way of looking at it. That is really important. Because we think, oh, maybe we're not strong enough. But I agree, Jack. I don't think we have anything that we can't handle, however hard it might seem.
But that was one of the reasons I loved the book, is there's so many examples in there. And it's so, you know, it's taken me a while, so long to read it, because you have to pause so often and think, because it's not, you're not just, you know, writing beautiful prose about it, although there are some beautiful prayers in there as well, which are really, really touching, and poems as well. But you give a lot of examples, and there's a lot of research gone in. You've really done an amazing job on the book.
Well, thank you, Jack. There was one I really liked, which blew my mind away. I don't know if you probably don't remember it, but it was about monkeys. And even thinking about it makes me sad. They do these experiments with monkeys, which actually I used to be anti-vaccination because I was anti-vivisection and all this. Mm. now I've sort of changed, I'm a bit more practical, but I'm still very, very upset about it. The experiments they did with animals. And they did an experiment with animals, with two monkeys in a cage. One monkey, they fed. The other monkey, when they fed him, when he touched the food, he got an electric shock, right? And they found that the other monkey stopped eating, because even though he could eat with no problem at all, his fellow in the other cage was being hurt. And 12 days, he didn't eat a thing. And I imagine they would do an experiment for that long, which, and people, we think we're so much more advanced than the monkey, you know what I'm saying? And we are, anyways. But the compassion and the feeling that, you know, the suffering of another monkey was his suffering. And I think it's true of us in the world, you know.
Mm. Yeah, it's such a sad story, yeah.
I want to depress people.
No.
I just thought about that. Another aspect of love is this empathy, is this sharing in people's grief.
Yeah. Mm. You talk a lot about gratitude in the book as well, about how that really comes across as important to have this gratitude for everything. You give so many different examples.
Oh, yeah. And especially, as I say, be grateful for the difficult times, because that makes it a lot easier. Yeah. And funny enough, if you are grateful for the difficult times, then good things come along to sort of boost you up, I find.
Mm.
And it's a state of being, actually, isn't it? You know, just giving thanks. Because once you start on that style, that path, you give thanks to the earth. We know the earth is a living being. You give thanks to the sun, and you give thanks to the Devic kingdom, you know, the nature spirits that tend to nature, and you give thanks to, and things like we take for granted, like people we love, give thanks to our parents, to our children, to our loved ones. It's all encompassing, really.
Yeah, that's the basis of many religions as well. The Buddhism, the Stoics, having this gratitude is and this humility.
Yeah.
And it's often easier when you're sick, because people are taking care of you, your egos, you know, you're not shiny to look at. I bet through your illness you felt tremendous gratitude for your friends and your family and the doctors and
they were amazing.
Yeah.
I never ever went to doctors before.
Mm-hmm. Try and avoid them.
But I came to realize that, God, these people are amazing. The doctors and nurses, full of, they can't do enough for you, you know, service in action, fantastic. I learned a lot. Gratitude. I remember reading about this astronaut, I think his name is Schweikert, and he was in space, and I can't remember if he was in a space station or something. But something went wrong and he was found himself floating in space. And he had this tremendous feeling of oneness with the universe, and his energies flowing through him. He expressed how he felt, and this sort of gratitude for creation, you know. And that really struck me. Of course, he had to go in space and find it. And of course, Dr. Edgar Mitchell, another astronaut that Gary and I were fortunate to meet, because I always wanted to meet an astronaut, Apollo 14 astronaut. He said they went to the moon. He was one of the first people to go to the moon in the 60s. But he said, we realized when we look back at the Earth that we actually went to see the Earth for the first time from space. And, you know, you're young, you know, people take it for granted, these pictures of Earth from space. But before these first astronauts went, we didn't have any pictures like that. And I think just seeing the Earth like that is so beautiful.
Yeah, so many people fighting on the world about their differences, but really, when you've been up in space, you see we have so much more in common.
Yeah, that's another thing the astronauts talked about, was the fact that the rivers flow through different countries and there's no boundaries in space. It's just one unit, one humanity, which we are, one race.
Yeah.
And I think it's hard to think, well, you know, I really can't make a difference to this situation now. You turn on the news now and it's worse than it's ever been, would you say, Jack?
I think it's getting worse regularly every day. Yeah, seems to be, they're cranking it up. Yeah.
Yeah, and of course it's, you know, we believe in, you know, not everyone's good, right? There's dark forces. There's dark forces on the lower realms that we pass away. We go to different realms of experience, right? According to the life we've led, basically. And if we spent this life doing really bad things and hurting other people and killing other people, we're going to go to lower realms and meet there some really bad people. Mm. And these are the people who are kind of fighting desperately, I feel, to create war on this planet. These pawns, weak-minded people, not so good people. And so we're in this battle. We're in a battle. Mm. And this is why it's so important for the people who do care. And I like to call them volunteers for peace. People who care, you don't have to believe anything in particular. You don't have to have a particular religion. You don't even have to. All you have to do is have a sort of a certain humanity, you know, a certain desire to want to have a live in a better world, a desire for your children or whatever. And we can do simple things that make a difference. And, you know, you might think, well, I'm only one person, but there again, Jack, if you look through history, it's always one person that changes civilization. Yeah. And then a critical mass, whether it's Gandhi or Martin Luther King or Dr. George King or, you know, you can name Mother Teresa. It's one person that starts this form rolling. And now in this age of Aquarius, it's a group. It's working together with others of like mind that's going to bring about change. And we're being called, I think, at this time. The worse it gets, the more we're called, the less choice we really have, I think, to not do something. And it's not, I don't think people have to change their lives. Mm-hmm. Just like maybe a few minutes of prayer to start with. You know, positive thinking, studying truth, sending money, whatever you want to do something.
There's a lot of people talking about the spiritual awakening that's going on at the moment. They use the words like 5D and things like that. It's quite in the parlance. You must have heard of it as well. And this general awakening. But the Aetherius Society, when they talk about this spiritual energy crisis and these, they have these Operation Prayer Power, where you put prayer energy into a battery and then release it when there's a crisis, or release it into a psychic center of the earth, for example, you know, use it like electricity. So that kind of concept is again, very new to me. And it comes back to your book, and is what we talked about in the beginning, and that you really do something practical. And, you know, it's calling upon these light workers really to do something, you know, in their living room, in their bedrooms, in their prayer rooms, which can, you know, avert these crises.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so much we can do. I mean, as I say, prayer, positive thought, service, giving help to others in one of many forms, so many ways we can serve. Breathing exercises helps to fill you with prana. So many practices you can do. And actually, I try and make my book practical, so I have lots of practices.
Oh, yeah, it's very good.
Violet flame practice. Very good one. Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you wanted, we could do a prayer for peace at some point in this.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Yeah, that's...
We'd join in.
You're so practical, you see. That's fantastic.
It has to be practical because we live in, you know, when we pass on, we'll live in the higher realms, hopefully the higher mental realms, not the lower realms, hopefully. We're living on this physical realm, which is practical.
Mm.
So the beauty of it is that we can do so much more, actually, than we can when we pass on the higher realms.
Mm.
And the other thing is that benefits everybody on this planet is the fact that the masters from the spiritual hierarchy of this earth and from beyond this earth, the cosmic masters, are helping us. And they help us in many different ways. And one is they give us these spiritual pushes, the cosmic masters, come at certain times of every year. Next one is my birthday, actually, April the 18th to May the 23rd. And they can pinpoint satellite number 3 can pinpoint anyone on earth who's doing something good, despite their religious beliefs, whatever. And they can enhance the effect of their action by 3,000 times. And there are four of these periods each year. And so people who are listening to this or open to this, just try it to yourselves. Try a prayer just before this spiritual push day starts, April the 18th. Try it the day before and try it the day after and see if you feel a difference, because I definitely feel a difference. And I know someone who left the Aetherius Society, and he no longer had access to the spiritual push dates, but he started to know when they were coming in and going out. And in the end, it was like so much evidence to him that this was real that he had to come back to the society.
Really?
Support you, yeah. It's a very real thing, a very powerful thing. So this is like a gift to us. But the thing is, the great ones, the masters, they're limited by our karma. And so they can't do as much as they would like, because that would be like divine intervention, which we don't really deserve because of the karma of humanity. But the beauty, I like to think of it this way, Jack, like every time you do a prayer or help someone or, you know, do something with a pure motive, you're helping them, the great ones, to do more. So I always like to think that, even if it's a small thing, you know, the members of the spiritual hierarchy, the masters, the ascended masters, when we release a battery through Operation Prayer Power, as it's mentioned, which is the global healing mission, where concentrated spiritual energy is thanks to Dr. King's invention, can be stored and accumulates. Now, we send it to, say, a disaster area, for example, Turkey and Syria, then we know that the members of the spiritual hierarchy are able to send more of their energy and their batteries, because they too have batteries on the in the spiritual hierarchy. So it's like I always find that we're not alone, you know.
Yeah.
We're not just one person or a group of people. We're cooperating with these higher ones, these great ones.
But yeah, before I joined the society, I believed in UFOs, and I believe in reincarnation, just because there's so much evidence about it, so much anecdotal evidence, so many sightings, so much, you know, so much proof from individual experiences. And to combine those two, and that, you know, the ascended masters from theosophy, and when you believe in reincarnation, it's an evolution. So it's kind of logical to believe that you must be going somewhere. And so you advance and into an ascended master, the spiritual hierarchy of Earth, Shambhala, and then even higher cosmic masters, life on other planets. That's the kind of logic that you're talking about with the understanding of the Aetherius Society. In that, reincarnation must be evolution. So where do you go? You don't just go to merge back with God once you've raised Kundalini or you've achieved enlightenment, like the Buddhists believe. But it makes so much more common sense, so much more sense when there's this, you know, the book, The Nine Freedoms, you talked about, in that we go through these other classrooms at different frequencies. And that's, you know, it sounds crazy when you're, you know, it's like an ant learning about an iPhone. It's a lot to take in.
Yeah. That's what I feel like with technology. it's so true. And it's so much more exciting, I think. I was never excited about the thought as I was born. Brought up a Christian, so I still think I'm a Christian, actually. Being told that when you die, you go to heaven. It's like, well, what's that? I just found that depressing. It's like, everybody's floating around and just...
Not very concrete, is it? Yeah.
But the thought of, as soon as I heard about, like you, reincarnation and karma and so forth, everything made sense and far much more exciting. And not even to think about past lives, because you've all had them, because this is the important life, right? This one we're living now. However famous you think you might have been in the past, this is the one you're living now, because it's the result of everything you've ever been in the past, good, bad, and indifferent. And we can guarantee that it can be better in the future by what we're doing now, or it can be worse by what we're doing now. It's up to us. And I love that sort of freedom that we have, don't you?
Yeah, I do, yeah. And I try to put the teachers into practice, like, just because you're living in you're living in Michigan, you have the branch there, and you're really immersed in it. But sometimes, you know, I'm in the south of Italy, and I'm the only one here, and I kind of, you know, it kind of sometimes, some days I don't go without it, you know. So I'm kind of dipping in and out, because if I don't keep myself topped up, and then I get these, you know, crises, these problems, not crises, you know, problems coming up through my life. And I'm really thinking now, realizing that I need to apply the spiritual energy crisis, you know, because once I get distracted by the materialistic world, and I, you know, I prioritize the practical things, and then the spiritual practices get pushed to the side, you know, because if I could just flip that, and then the problems I think wouldn't come up. So that's what we're going to try and test out.
Yeah, it's hard, I know, because we're so busy and life is so intense on all levels. You know, I have to learn a living, and I still have to earn a living, unfortunately. And all these other things, and you have a family, and lots and lots going on. But I that's why I try and write my books in a way that it makes it very simple for people to just give, like, don't worry about doing an hour's meditation, just do 5 minutes. Start the day with 5 minutes. And if that's in a day, then that's it. Better than nothing, right?
Yeah, but I used to do an hour before I had a kid. I had a 3 hour morning. I go up to like a 3 hour morning routine, and then kind of go off the cliff. And then, you know how it goes, because you get all you want to do, everything.
Exactly. So go back to the 5 minutes. And then
go back to the 5 minutes.
Or I have a book called Workout for the Soul, which has a 15 minute workout, where you can do everything. You can do breathing in it. It has breathing, visualization, prayer, healing. It has the whole thing in 15. You can do it in 15 minutes.
And what's in that? Where's that from?
Workout for the Soul.
Your other book.
Published book.
Okay.
I think it is still available on Amazon.
You've racked them up, the books. I mean, you're steady.
Well, they go in and out of print. But the other thing that only takes 15 minutes, of course, is the 12 blessings.
Yeah, of course.
And we haven't mentioned that. And
right.
You know, for people who are interested, and this is a fantastic thing, you can join in online services at 12blessings.org. We have these almost daily online services of the 12 blessings. And we tend to send, focus each one to particular situations in the world, whether it's, you know, a war situation or, you know, crisis of some kind. And the whole thing, I think, takes about 30 minutes. But the actual 12 blessings, if you just want to do the 12 blessings, you can do that in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's the most powerful, balanced, wonderful practice delivered by the Master Jesus for this coming age, this age in which we're in, through the advanced mediumship of Dr. George King, the yoga master Dr. George King. In the 1950s, 1958, he gave one blessing over on each Sunday for 12 Sundays in 1958 in the little temple I used to go to in London. And you feel the power of this incredible happening, historic event. And then these blessings, of course, as you know, Jack, they're wonderful teachings. But there it's also a spiritual practice which you can use. And by doing that, we get so many benefits ourselves, don't we? Blessed are they who work for peace, blessed are they who, the wise ones, blessed are they who love, different blessings, a continuation of the Master Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, to include a cosmic concept for this age in which we live. Because the great ones, they come to teach us in a way that we can, sort of ahead of their time at the time, but in a way that we can understand. So when Jesus came 2,000 years ago, he was teaching in a very different way to his teaching today. And you know, his promises that he's still with us, and he is.
Well, yeah. And when the God in the Bible was the Son, and that's kind of been taken out a bit, people don't really understand that's the key. So, and then in the 12 blessings, you hear him come back and say he sends blessings to the galaxy, a greater living being, even more evolved than the sun, obviously, and then beings are beyond that. And then that kind of takes that reincarnatory evolutionary step a long way down the road for us all.
Yeah. I think it's one great shame about the church, and I love the church, by the way, I do. I don't want to knock it, but that they haven't taken on board reincarnation, because it was taken out of Christianity in about the 5th century, I believe, by Emperor Justinian, I believe it was.
Right, Constantinople,
And it was taken out and never put back. And I think that would just, you know, churches are losing people. You're around here in Michigan, and masses of churches, but so many are closed down now, which is a shame. But they need to put back that teaching.
Yeah.
Makes sense of everything, doesn't it?
Well, maybe you could do like a 5-minute practice for us to, if it's something we could just put into action. I know you mentioned the violet flame, or do you have anything? Yeah.
Have you got time to do that and then a prayer for the same?
Of course, we've got all the time. It's a podcast, so we're not restricted.
I just grabbed my book. I've got a prayer in it. Let's start with the violet flame then, everybody who wishes to just sit comfortably with your feet flat on the floor, hands palms downwards on the knees, relaxed around your neck and shoulders. Take a few deep breaths. Until you start to feel the sense of peace within. And every breath you take, you go that little bit deeper within. And now let us sink downwards to the Mother Earth beneath our feet. And realize that she is a living, breathing, thinking, evolving intelligence. And this has been proved by science. She emits a vibration of love. And let us think about this great being with a spirit of gratitude for all she gives to us. Let us think downwards and request humbly from her living heart, her violet flame, this transmuting, cleansing flame, which she gives always. Request it to flow up through your feet, the lower part of your body and aura, right up. Take it up as high as you can. Take it right up above the head, some 30 or 40 feet above the head, if you can. See yourself bathed in this violet flame, this cool, cleansing, transmuting flame from the heart of the Mother Earth. See yourself encased in this beautiful flame, this living flame, which is cleansing your aura, strengthening, healing. Take a few deep breaths. And back. And let us now join, shall we, in a prayer to bring peace to our suffering world.
I won't use my book. Let's just do it.
Please raise the hands. And what we call the prayer mudra, and that is with the hands about shoulder height, the fingers and thumb together, not tight, but just relaxed. Keep your shoulders relaxed, feet flat on the floor. And now, as I offer this prayer, just join mentally in with it and just feel this, your love pouring forth as I say the word. O divine and wondrous creator of life, we humbly ask that we might be used as channels for thy love to flow through us in a great living stream of light, of healing, of strength to all who are suffering upon our world, to bring them hope, to bring them strength. We pray, O God, that this thy light may flow through us to all those who are feeling hopeless, to bring them hope, May it flow to all the hospitals to bring healing and all those who are in the darkest places to bring light. And we pray now that this may flow to all those who are suffering as a result of the earthquakes in Turkey and Syria. We pray, O God, that those who are suffering loss and injury may be helped and healed at this time. And we pray that aid may flow from around the world to help these ones in their loss. May it flow to give strength to the rescue workers, the medics, and all who are helping on the ground in this difficult situation. No wondrous God, may this great power of love flow through us to bring harmony and balance to our chaotic world. We thank thee for listening to our prayer. May thy will be done. Now just swipe the right hand over the left once with the mudra of detachment as we detach from the spiritual energy we've just sent out to the world, and we can carry on with our chores, everyday life, and the knowledge that we've done something. It was kind of a short prayer, but it's something to bring love into the world. And so there are many, many different things we can do. Service has many, many forms, as you know, but let's do something, even if it's something small. Anything you want to add to that?
No, that was beautiful. Thank you so much. Yeah, it can be as simple as that. And when you're feeling the love, the heartfelt words flow.
Yeah, and going back, thank you. Going back to the spiritual energy crisis, can I?
Sure,
about for a few minutes. That was a term that Dr. George King, we talked about, coined in the 1960s. Before anyone thought about any kind of crisis really on this planet. Well, I mean, there were wars going on and this kind of thing, but this climate crisis and all that, we're seeing the results of that now. It wasn't even really talked about very much, but he coined this term, the spiritual energy crisis. And he said that this is the main energy crisis on this planet. And it's hard to believe that because you see all the others, right? How can that be the case? But if you think about it, If more spiritual energy was put into the world, more love, then consciousness has to raise, right?
Mm.
We know that, for example, in our own lives. And so we go and look at a beautiful sunset and we're inspired by it. What happens is we feel different. Our consciousness is risen by that. So when more love is poured into our world, or when we're with someone we love, like a child, I'm sure you feel your consciousness, you feel different. And when love comes to the world, and enough love comes into the world. And that's why Dr. King invented these global healing missions to help solve this crisis. Then consciousness must raise. And then if consciousness has risen, how on earth can we have division or war? It would be impossible, right?
Yeah.
We haven't got to that point yet.
Mm.
And this is why a critical mass of people is needed. You know, it's every one of us is needed, I think, now. These are vital times.
Yeah.
And the more difficult they get, the more we're being called. So
people talk about the 60s of it, or that brings to mind when you talk about this love. You were alive then. And that was also after the primary initiation of Earth, which is a very important date in the Aetherius Society. Do you think they were connected? And did you feel energy at that time generally?
No, I was in my teens. I don't think I was really that. I mean, I was kind of searching, but not seriously. Later on, I did. It became a desperate search. But at that time, I wasn't really aware of that. But I know the 60s were an exciting time, and the 70s too. Very exciting. But yeah, this great change with the initiation of the Earth. And I was reading, you know, Alice Bailey?
Mm.
Alice Bailey's books. And you know that she was a channel for Master Dwal Kul from the spiritual hierarchy, a master in the spiritual hierarchy. And he channeled, I think, 19 of her 24 books were channeled through him. And in one of them, Esoteric Astrology, the Master Dwell calls through her, talks about the earth. And in fact, he says that he said it's one of the non-sacred planets. And I know that book was written, I think, in the 40s or something, maybe about the 1940s, 30s maybe. And I was wondering whether it used to be, but since the initiation of Earth, it would now be classed as one of the sacred planets in the solar system. Because all the planets, because they're evolving like we are, they too are going through initiations, just like we had initiations. And so I do believe that initiation of Earth on July the 8th, 1964, was very, very important. Initiation for this planet, as it was called, the primary initiation. So now I'm pretty sure she would be regarded as a sacred planet. Wow. Also in the book, I have to say, the Master Dwell Course said, there will come a time when all astrologers must take into account the influence of the planet on which they live, the Earth. And because I've read that quite a few times, I kept waiting for astrologers to get that. And that's why I wrote my book, Earth, Astrologers Missing Planet. And
another great book. Hoping, yeah.
I mean, I'm hoping that astrologers might take it into account. I just think astrologers are one group of people who really could make a huge difference on this earth, because they believe in reincarnation and karma. They believe in life on other realms and other planets. They believe the planets are living beings. And yet they get too stuck in their heads. I'm sorry, astrologers. And now they're going greatly into dwarf planets and all these kind of things. They're forgetting the earth in which we live and the sun.
They're standing on it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I've taken classes with students who know very little about astrology. And they always, and when I talk about the earth, they say, well, that's obvious that we should take the earth into account. And yet, astrologers, come on, please. Take it seriously. Because it's not just about realizing that the influence of the earth and what this means to us, but it's kind of reconnecting with the earth, I think. And we've become so disassociated with this planet.
We're just ahead of the times. I mean, but you have had a lot of advantages in terms of teaching and
but you know, there's so much teaching out there now, but the problem is too much, right? Do you think, Jack?
Maybe
it's hard now, because when I was young, there were only a few really spiritual teachers who wrote books. Now everybody writes books. So it's hard.
Are you going to write a biography, though? Because I was reading Paul's Maya Mira. That was fantastic. Are you?
Yeah, possibly. But so much else gets in the way. But that's certainly there.
Because that's probably the most important, because you were alive. You had, every year you look back at those times with greater understanding of the significance in terms of,
I sort of beat myself up, I suppose, that I didn't realize how great Dr. King was that I do now, you know, back. Because when you're with someone, all this is happening, you're very excited, you appreciate it. But looking back at things, I think I realize I should have done this, I should have done that.
not slept and, done everything.
I mean, we were working pretty hard from early morning to late night. helping him in his mission. That was great. So, Gary and I do want to do something like that.
You should do it. You owe it to for the preservation of...
That's true.
I was just listening to Richard Lawrence, your co-host. Aetherius Radio Live, the episode that came out. And
that's amazing. Richard's always been amazing. First time I met him was 18. I was 21. And I knew he was different, And the people I work with, in different parts of the world, great people. But Richard just stood out always as someone different, because he was like focused. At the age of 18, how many people are really focused on the spiritual path? Never missed an opportunity to advance, took every possible opportunity. He was fantastic around the Master. It was like he was understood what it's like to be around a master, probably had been in the past. He was always just different. It really is worth listening to that.
So he's been doing it in society for 51 years, and now he's finally, the Kundalini is rising and he's getting the proof of because he's been so involved in he's not been doing practices, you know, 8 hours a day like he was a yogi. So he's been so involved in the society, but now he is getting some these experiences, which are just so interesting for us to hear about, because, you know, I'm a long way from that, and that's so inspiring.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Very inspiring. And people can read it and listen to it actually on his website, www.richardlawrence.co.uk. He has the Kundalini Diaries, he calls them.
Mm.
There. And yeah, it's fantastic. And he wanted to prove that by following this path, the path of King Yoga, which is Dr. George King, was part of the Aetherius Society, and doing the practices and so on, and getting the service, that we can reach the higher states of consciousness. And he did prove it to himself and to others. And it's a journey. He would admit that it's a step along the way.
Yeah,
but it's
yeah.
a significant step. Yeah.
No, it's a very well put together. Reads beautifully, and yeah, it's a very powerful episode. Yeah.
Yeah. Do read it, people. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do listen to it. Because he says it in such a sincere and honest way that, you know, you can't doubt that it's true, and it is true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that Aetherius Radio Live. I've heard almost all the episodes now, so it's
really. Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
The next one should be interesting because it's on the Kundalini.
Part three.
Part three.
Yeah.
So no doubt I'll be able to question Richard about his experience and so on.
Wow, yes. Well, you know, thanks so much for doing. I've said it at the beginning, and thanks so much. And I know you don't like to promote your work, but I think we've done a pretty good job in the past hour. So where can people find more about you?
Well, I have a website, chrissyblaze.com, but I don't do anything to it. The person who designed it and has all the key to unlock it is living in India, and I can't contact him. So the one I use is called astrologycity.com.
Okay.
It has all my books on it as well, spiritual and astrology books.
Astrologycity.com. And your books are also on Amazon. I've got mine on the Kindle, so they're all available. They're easier to get on the Kindle. Yeah.
And, you're one of the few that buy my books. I need four.
Yeah, I used The Baby Star Signs was the last one, and
I think that's out of print now, possibly.
No. Yeah, I think it's on the Kindle. So,
okay, good. Yeah.
I think you need to update the dates as well, because 20 years old, and you didn't foresee the lifespan of the book.
I didn't foresee how quickly time flies. But yeah, definitely.
How about?
Well, thanks. Very nice to talk to you.
It's been great, and thanks again for doing my astrology chart. I really consult that as well regularly, and it's proving to be true. I'm doing the work that
so creative, Jack. Wow, I'm so impressed.
Thank you. Well, it's I'm on a mission. I really want to promote the society. I'm doing Pod Songs to as a vehicle to promote the society, and I hope
it works.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
And actually, the song here, I have cheated a little bit. I have already written the song, and it's a song. It's not entirely. It's a romantic song. It's called Deeper Than Love, and it's Deeper Than Love, which is not really true. So I wrote it actually before, a long time ago, but it's such a good song. And I tried to change the lyrics where I could to fit with the society, but it doesn't really fit with what we've talked about. But I guess it means deeper than love, deeper than an emotional. What real love between two people is deeper than just an emotion, because that comes and it goes, you know.
I love romantic poetry.
Yeah, okay. So you forgive me. You forgive me.
Then. Oh, no, I'm sure I will. I'm a romantic, so, you know, it's better to be
okay.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, thanks very much, Chris. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
All right.
Meet you soon.
Take care. Bye-bye.
After our life together, we don't need to speak.
to say what we're thinking or know what we need. What started out as love has gone far above, become something we can live with, something that lasts. Cause love is a feeling, it comes and it goes, ebbs and it flows, and everyone knows. It dims and it glows, hides and it shows, speeds and it slows, and it shrinks and it grows. What we have is
for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed the song and the episode. The song will be released next week on all streaming platforms, but you can pre-save on Spotify and all other streaming services at the link in the show notes. Please also support the artist by following them on social media and adding the song to any playlists you have. This is a completely free show. You've listened this far, so I'd really appreciate it if you just click like and subscribe. and follow us at Podsongs on your social media platforms. Subscribe to the newsletter at podsongs.com for special updates. Or just tell the next person you meet about this amazing show where musicians interview their idols and write a song about them. The songs are available for download from the Podsongs website as well, which pays a lot more than the 0.00 whatever we get from Spotify. You can also email me at jack@podsongs.com. Give me feedback. Tell me about artists you'd like to have on, guest combos. I'm here for you. I want to hear from you. We're a listener-supported show, so just get in touch. A final thanks to my researchers, Dori Verbo and Rosa Marino, my producer, Maurizio Sanicola of Goldmine Records, and musicians, Massimino Vozza and Luigi Falcione. The next episode will be out really soon. In the meantime, you can listen to more amazing episodes in the archives. Until then, have a great day.